Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we welcome you back to The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything you need at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, we were off the last week, so there's never any shortage of news, but we've always stuck to our three-story format. And I think they shine a good light on things that are going on in the world. There is a lot of seemingly chaotic things happening, and I think the important thing is to not let yourself get bogged down into the chaos. So we'll return with a story that may not be seemingly so pressing when you look at healthcare or you look at the NSA and all these other stories going on, but I think it shines a light on the duplicity in a way that we constantly see. So we'll just take it from the good old Huffington Post on Russell Brand's epic interview with the BBC and how it just might start a revolution. When Russell Brand agreed to guest edit The New Statesman, one of Britain's political and current affairs magazines, he set out to write about revolution, he says, because, quote, imagining the overthrow of the current political system is the only way I can be enthused about politics, end quote. But it seems his subsequent interview with the BBC's Jeremy Paxman, prompted by that article, has attracted far more attention. In it, Brand defends his policy of not voting, which serves as a launchpad for a broad critique of the current political system. I'll just read you one quick quote, and of course, in as always we do, provide all the links to all the things that we mention here on the show. Brand said, quote, "It's not that I'm not voting out of apathy. I'm not voting out of absolute indifference and weariness and exhaustion from the lies, treachery, deceit of the political class that has been going on for generations now and has now reached a fever pitch where we have a disenfranchised, disillusioned, despondent underclass that is not being represented by that political system. So voting for it is tacit complicity with that system." So James will also include a scathing critique of this whole scenario, because James, I think we can really see over the last 10 years with alternative media, with 9/11 truth and all of these things, we see these stories every now and then where you say, Charlie Sheen is waking people up, Rosie O'Donnell is waking people up, Russell Brand is waking people up. Thomas Sheridan writes a piece where he says, no, he's just putting them back to sleep. So, James, I will throw it to you as we kind of dissect this latest media meme.
Well, I would like to hear your take on it, but personally, I've seen that a lot of people are positively wetting their pants over this bandwagon that they're all jumping on board. Oh, wow, some famous actor, multimillionaire actor, is on the BBC talking about things that that we talk about. Therefore, it must be great. The revolution is being televised after all. Now we can start. Yay. Oh, socialist redistribution of wealth? Hey, sign me up. I certainly do agree with some of the things that Brand says in this interview, and of course, we're putting the link in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself if you haven't yet, although I'm sure many of the listeners already have seen this particular interview. But I certainly agree with some of his points and about the voting being completely, not just futile, but counterproductive in the current system. And some of the other points that he brings up, very good. And he's a very engaging speaker. There's no doubt about that. But the idea that people are so excited because some Hollywood, well, not Hollywood, but some actor is basically mouthing some of the things they agree with on the BBC is bizarre to me, because again, it indicates that a lot of the people out there who otherwise would say, yeah, you know, MSM media, it's all propaganda, who cares, they genuinely still get excited when they see something on the mainstream media as if that validates or vindicates their position. In my mind, I do not give the BBC or the CNN the credit that a lot of people seem to, that, oh, now that it's been televised, it's a big thing. And when you look at the actual numbers, even some of the primetime CNN shows have viewerships in the tens of thousands. There are YouTube channels that have consistently more viewers than that. Some of my podcast episodes get way more viewers than that, and I'm relatively small fry when it comes to the media. So people make these outlets into legends in their own minds and then wet their pants when some Hollywood figure or whatever comes out and says something they vaguely agree with. Personally, I'm not buying into it, and I want to defend Thomas Sheridan because I see he's getting a lot of critiques for daring to question Russell Brand, and he makes a good point. Here's Russell Brand, who you can see the pictures of Russell Brand dutifully giving the Masonic handshake to the Queen and bowing and curtsying and being all polite, whereas Thomas Sheridan would call her out for the psychopath she is, and the truther community is ganging up against Thomas Sheridan. it's just a bizarre situation. So that's my take, and I would also direct people over to Thomas Secker's new podcast called Clandestime. In his latest episode, he talks about this at great length, and I think he has some interesting things to say as well. But I'm interested to hear your perspective over there in America and what you've been hearing about this.
You know, I found someone like Russell Brand pretty easy to ignore over the years. But I know, James, I definitely got a kick just a couple of months ago where he was, I believe, hosting the GQ Awards, fashion awards. And he made jokes about how, oh, yeah, you know, Hugo Boss, fashion company, you know, and all the uniforms they made for the Nazis. And that was, you know, scorn was heaped upon him. But I love that because that's, you know, I love the idea of using comedy to get truths out there that's going to make someone look that up and go, oh, wow, they did work with the Nazis. Look at all these other people. And that it would open that door to, you know, more research. If I look at it through my own lens of musical snobbery, as I look at a lot of things through a musical kind of lens in a lot of ways. He dated Katy Perry for a long time. And as bad as this may sound, I would kind of look at that and she's not exactly one of the greatest artistic things going right now. It may be wrong, but I would look at that and go, well, obviously you can't be that progressive because how would you be with something that garbage and bubblegum and throwaway.
He didn't just date her, James. He married her, which Thomas Secker calls a crime against humanity on his podcast, which I thought was a nice turn of phrase. But I agree. I mean, I think we have to be very cautious when one of these people who are in the heart of the entertainment industry comes out with these types of things and is suddenly the leader of some revolution that's now on because it's on the BBC. I mean, come on.
In the comments on that Thomas Sheridan post, also some of the folks do point out that you look at this person and this person and this person that Brand is all connected to, he's pretty much a Rothschild connected dude. And I think that's something you'll find when you look at a lot of the sort of supposed new counterculture kind of characters. And I've watched the musician MIA for that in the same kind of way. I found her really fascinating. And I love some of the work that she does. But when I look behind the scenes, it's like, oh, you're completely loving to be a part of this system. So, James, we've probably said about as much as we can and should about all that. But again, we'll include all those links, and you can check out his connections to the Rothschild dynasty and his jokes about Hugo Boss and the Nazis, and watch the video for yourself and make up your own mind and then turn off the TV probably. James, we will turn in our second story to something that I did mention there at the very beginning, and we'll take it from good old InfoWars. CIA-funded software company manages private data for healthcare.gov. A software company funded by the Central Intelligence Agency is managing data on healthcare.gov, the Obamacare, or it is Halloween for folks out there now, so hashtag Obamascare, if you will. Exchange website, the vaunted site you've heard so much about over these last several weeks. InQTEL, that's InQTEL, and again, we'll give you the links to it. That's the CIA's venture capital firm. They invested heavily into Socrata, the software company who provides data collection and management for healthcare.gov and medicare.gov. Through a press release, Socrata announced a strategic investment and technology development agreement with InQTEL, the independent strategic investment firm that identifies innovative technology solutions such as Google and Facebook. And they're connected with, they just bought a new company called Keyhole, which should probably tell you something. And they're also connected to DARPA as well. So, James, again, this is, I know one, we probably are always sort of interested in peering into the country that the other is living into, going, how are you guys looking at this? But is there any take on the other side of the world, like, oh yeah, the Americans, they're freaking out about this computer healthcare thing?
Well, I don't know if it's really much of a story over here in Japan, but I'm certainly keeping an eye on what's going on, and the debacle behind this, the rollout of this is just, I mean, it's almost difficult to even imagine how this was flubbed up so badly. Unless it was perhaps, I mean, there may be other motives behind what's going on. There may be other things going on behind the scenes, which is why I find this story particularly interesting, because I don't want to just, as a knee-jerk reflex thing, say if something is InQtel funded, then it must be, you know, in the heart of the CIA or some, you know, nefarious plan, because they fund a lot of different companies. But when it's a company that's dealing with data that is being pumped into this healthcare.gov website, I mean, that's a point which, as an if you were an American, I would be extremely concerned about that. And for people who don't know about InQtel, what it is, how it functions, I did do an eye-opener report back in 2011 that I'll point people to called Exposing InQtel, the CIA's Own Venture Capital Firm, where we go through the history of InQtel and what they've been involved with, including things, as you mentioned, Keyhole Inc., which became the basis for Google Earth eventually. It was an InQtel-funded venture that got taken over by Google that became Google Earth. So literally, Google is in bed with the CIA in all sorts of different ways, including tangential ones like that. But a very interesting company. And again, I think that this one is particularly important because, of course, the debacle surrounding healthcare.gov raises all sorts of questions about the security of the information that that's going into this website. And to see the CIA having its fingers in that pie, I don't know, what can you say other than, good luck. I hope you guys know what you're getting yourselves into.
And just today, actually, Sebelius, the head of the Health and Human Services Department here in the States, she pretty much, I think, probably performed the Fall on the Sword act today and sort of came out and said, I apologize for it, seeming to take blame, and there probably is, that's how heads are going to roll. James, I'll make another musical analogy. Just as you were saying, just because InQtel is involved doesn't necessarily mean that they're completely in bed with the spooks. I could also say, well, that's true. Just because somebody's on a major label doesn't mean they're automatically bad or they're horror sellouts. I think other interesting notes, James, kind of surrounding this, as you look at the news here in the States, I mean, it's been going on now for a long time where it seems like the wheels are coming off on every possible axle as the whole NSA scandal continues to explode. You've got the healthcare thing falling apart. So I find the trial beginning of the UK phone hacking that began right now to really take shape. And it's all about Murdoch, and it's all about media, and it's all about spying. It's a really similar story, just playing out in kind of a different arena. And I also find it amusing, James, that the NSA tapped Vatican phones during the papal conclave as more and more of these kind of Snowden revelations continue to spill out. So it's just, it's pretty ugly here in the States in a way. It's a crap show, to use the more polite kind of term for it, James. So I'll turn to our third and final story this week, James, unless you have anything to say about InQtel.
The only other thing I'll say is that if there's any other time for non-compliance, I couldn't imagine where it would be better than in Obamacare. I mean, I think people have to stop just buying into the system, literally. And I'm also going to have more to say about healthcare coming up on the podcast tomorrow. As everything starts to return back to normal, my family's gone back to Canada, so I'm going to be putting up more on the website, including a podcast tomorrow.
Okay. So we'll finish with not really a positive story this week, as we're looking ahead to November 1st. And I find, again, James, this maybe connects back to the first story. These perceptions put out in the media, do they become reality? Is it a fait accompli? Do the food stamp riot predictions, are they writing a sort of blank check for mayhem as food bank CEO warns of riots over major food stamp cuts? This comes from RT. The U.S. food stamp system is to be reduced by $5 billion starting in November. November 1st is this Friday, the day after you guys are watching this. The average benefit will shrink and the overall number of people receiving it will diminish by millions. The CEO of America's largest food bank says the cuts will end in riots. Quote, riots always begin typically the same way, when people cannot afford to eat, end quote. Margaret Purvis, director and CEO of the Food Bank for New York City, telling Salon. She added that families face the daunting prospect of losing a whole week's worth of food every month. Currently, the program costs about $80 billion a year and provides food aid nearly 15% of all U.S. households, over 45 million people. James, there was a couple of stories I've been tracking on not only Food World Order with Craigslist making food stamps into another black market area. But I also posted on Cyberspace War 2 weekends ago on October 12th. There was this electronic benefits transfer, EBT, SNAP, the electronic food stamps, basically. Chaos. And people didn't get the benefits they were supposed to get, and other people got massive benefits that they were never supposed to get. And stores, and I found it really interesting, James, that most of the stories were centered on Walmart, as if this was the only and main venue that this was taking place, and it probably was to the degree. It was chaos, and the stores basically let people use the money that had been gifted to them digitally. And interestingly enough, it turns out that it was all because of a routine test at Xerox, who were basically running a drill in a way. So, James, are they prepping us for the idea and making it's like, oh, so when this happens, it's okay for you guys to freak out and wreck grocery stores?
Well, that's one take on it. Either way, I think that glitch was probably not just some random glitch, especially happening just 2 weeks before the big cut that we're all expecting here in the food stamps. And so either they are, I guess, prepping people, conditioning them to riot when this happens, or it may have been a test to see what people will do when this happens, if they suddenly can't get their benefits or not as much as they had expected. How will they react? That kind of social engineering experiment. Either way, I think that there's something very suspicious about that glitch a couple of weeks ago that only, as far as I understand, lasted a couple of hours. But even in that time, there were riots and stuff breaking out in some of the stores in some places. So very interesting to watch what will occur. And unfortunately, I think that this is just reaping what has been sown over the last couple of generations of the buildup of the social safety net, which used to, of course, in previous generations be taken care of by private charity in people donating and helping out each other. Now everyone is conditioned that this can only come from the government, who must steal your money through taxation and then give it to other people after they get their hands into that trough. And what is the end result of this? Eventually you do get a system where people are literally dependent for their life on government. And I don't want to blame the victims for this, because the people who have become dependent on that system are in many ways victims of a system that they didn't have any hand in creating. But unfortunately, this is the end result, and it becomes very easy to simply pull that plug and watch the chaos ensue, because people have forgotten how to take care of each other. So once again, all the solutions we always talk about, what you can do, what you can personally achieve, are the real solutions that come into play, because they cannot be taken away through any food stamp cut or reduction or anything like that. And if people are involved in their communities helping each other out, then they would be much less susceptible to this. So once again, it comes down to community level solutions and what people can do for each other, not what the government can do for you to increase your subsidies or what have you.
James, I'd be crazy if I missed an opportunity now to mention that maybe we'll add in the episode of Film Literature and the New World Order, where we talked about the little film called Soylent Green. And also, on my last deprogramming note here, James, as we wrap it up, and I think it speaks to actually what we're talking about, is not taking part in the system. I had the pleasure of doing an amazing interview last week with Exin Chervenka, who's the founder and singer of the punk band X. And she's completely tapped in, knows pretty much everything going on in the alternative media, and has been there doing it for decades now. So we'll include that link, because I would love folks to check that interview out, because that's really, I think, more as I strive to kind of put more media in the monarchy, that's more what I'm trying to move towards, I think.
Awesome. Great. Well, again, on my deprogramming note, I am coming back online with more programming in the near future. So I hope people will stay tuned, including my podcast coming out tomorrow. On that note, I think that's going to do it for this week. James, thank you again. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Thank you.